Welcome to the Solid Signal video podcast for the week of March 18th, 2024. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I said that I would love to have some guests on our podcast. And our first guest, this is the first time we've ever actually had anybody live on the podcast. And I want to introduce you to Dr. Nilay Shah. Dr. Nilay Shah is the medical director for several neurology programs and clinics in New Jersey and New York. He's the founding member of the BrainPack Board of the American Academy of Neurology. He serves as a member of the board of directors for the New York State Neurologic Society. And honestly, I could go on and on with his resume, but why is he here? Because I've known Nilay for a long time. And truth is, you will not find somebody who is more of an early adopter than Dr. Nilay Shah. Dr. Shah, Nilay, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being our first guest.
Really a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much for having me here today.
So I know that you've been playing around with tech for about as long as I have. What has been, if you think about it, your favorite experience with technology?
I think part of it is the community around it. Like, as an early adopter, I remember camping out for the first iPhone and the first Palm Pilots and having that excitement, not just of a new gadget, but of opening up a new world, basically, with technology that, you know, is new to us, new to play with, and opens up communications possibilities and all of that with other people that are just as excited. That, to me, is part of it.
And when you say camping out, you mean you actually stayed overnight in a line to get an iPhone? You were that guy?
I got up at 4 a.m. and I was far enough up front. I happened to go to a small town in upstate New York for that first iPhone. And by 4 a.m, I was number 4 in line. When they opened the doors, they were taking in 4 people at a time. So I was in that first batch. And luckily, by whatever, you know, good luck, et cetera, I had really good credit. I had good scores. I had pre-checked everything. So I was the first one out the door with my new iPhone. And the news crews were there, and a friend was visiting from out of town and ran up to me and gave me a big hug as I'm triumphantly holding the iPhone. And it was quite a spectacle, to say the least.
And I know you, since then, you've probably had about 15 of them. What was your favorite iPhone?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 5'3". I'm not a tall guy. My pockets are small. And for me, the latest generation of, I think it was iPhone 12 or 13 mini phones that had come out, were wonderful to hold, along with, you know, decent camera technology and all the bells and whistles. Currently, I, you know, do have the iPhone 15 Pro. And overall, as I do get older, my eyes like the bigger text on the phones. But from a size perspective and, you know, just carrying it around, if it were just a smidge smaller, I would be so much more comfortable with it.
When you talk about the iPhone 15 and pretty much every modern cell phone today, the thing that always comes back to me is the gigantic camera bump. Do you think that we're ever going to be able to get away from a camera bump, not just from a technological standpoint, but also I think from the point of view of, you know, people look for it. People think, oh, if I've got a big camera bump, it must mean I've got a great camera. Do you think that's ever going to change?
It's a good question. I think it's been instilled into our psyche that, you know, having that is a good thing now, as opposed to it being annoying and, you know, now it doesn't sit flat on the table or anything like that. I think we've been tricked into realizing or believing that having a camera bump means we're better off. From the perspective of, you know, where the future holds, you know, I think the technology will easily improve to the point where we won't need that bump anymore in future models, because they can take away that extra space or add to it with more battery or something like that. But having that bump, I think we've been basically conditioned into believing it's a good thing.
I hear the Vision Pro was not exactly what you expected.
It was and it wasn't. I went into the store for the demo saying I'm not going to buy this, but in all honesty, it is a spectacular device in certain ways. The immersive visual effects and audio are so good that I really had a great time within the device. Some people say if you spend time in it, you can get nauseous or sick or a headache. I was lucky. I didn't feel any negative side effects to that end. And even when I reluctantly brought it home and my wife's jaw dropped, like, you didn't buy it. And I'm like, I did. And I came home with it and I sat with it on me for, 3 hours at a stretch. It was amazing. I had a blast going through and enjoying media. However, I don't have time to just watch TV shows and movie and, YouTubes all day long. The experience for those events was fantastic. But beyond that, at least at this point, I couldn't justify it because I couldn't get much work done on it. From a productivity perspective, having a big screen and then, using my Bluetooth keyboard, I could do stuff. I could work in Microsoft Word and stuff. But part of the problem is Apple's file management system on iOS just doesn't cut it for me. If you use a Macintosh computer or a PC, you know how to save your files and copy them and paste them. But with the iPad and the iPhone and then the Vision Pro, they're using this Files app and a folder. And it just, I couldn't really work around it with the structure of files and how I manage documents, whether it's logging into patient charts or other such things. And so for me, I could not get work done on it. And for that reason, I had to give up the device very sadly.
I know that Apple has been pushing a lot more productivity toward the iPad, toward the Vision Pro. What's it going to take for you to maybe pick up the next generation? Tell me if they did X thing that you'd actually buy another one.
I mean, from the perspective of how it actually works, it's brilliant. Like within minutes, using your eyes and just the little clicky motions of your fingers, navigating through the system, they've done a really good job. Very thoughtful, very well laid out, easy to spread monitors around like you're in a fancy movie in the future and have your tickers running here for this and your emails and your messages. From that perspective, it was fantastic. But from a file management perspective and from being able to be productive on it, I think it's still going to be a little bit of a challenge because it's using the more curtailed iOS operating system. As that gets more robust, I think it's going to work out within a generation or two. I definitely see that, as with all technology, as it improves, it'll get smaller, it'll get lighter, it'll be less intrusive. However, at least right now, aside from in my house, I'm not going to be that guy on the subway or the airplane with this big thing on or walking around the streets. It's just it's too intrusive. It's too in everybody else's face. Like, look at me, I can do this and I can spend almost $5,000 on this gadget. It will get smaller. And as they fix the apps and improve upon the operating system, I'm pretty sure that more and more people will dive into it. And I'll get it again, just because the multimedia experience was so phenomenal.
So let's move on to just kind of gadgets in general. Thinking back about 20 years when you and I were much younger men, a gadget was a physical thing and you had a bag full of them. You maybe had a camera, maybe you had a PDA, maybe a decent cell phone at the time. Well, today it's all apps. Is that better or is it really, do you miss the days when you could actually just pick up a new thing?
I think that there is something about that tactile feel of having a new toy in your hand, a new gadget, new ways to work the buttons or switches and interact with an actual device. Whereas with software, it's so two-dimensional that unfortunately, I think it doesn't strike those dopamine glands and receptors as much as gadgets used to in the past.
And lately I have been noticing on my socials a lot more people talking about something called vintage computing, which cracks me up.
So yeah, as far as the vintage scene is concerned, I think that, it's natural for us to have some nostalgia towards the equipment that was at the start of the generation. And for people like you and me, it's in our lifetime that the whole computing era really broke out for the general public, as opposed to being just at academic centers for Department of Defense or research labs. So the first home computers is stuff that we actually grew up on. So there's that nostalgia associated with it. And then, you know, having the younger generations pick up on it, I think that they also maybe have some element of, you know, nowadays it's all new apps versus actual gear and hardware. And going back to the old gear and looking at it, it's almost quaint seeing that, you know, we spent, you know, $3,000 for a screen this small that was just barely color. And, you know, and nowadays we have computing power that is hundreds of multiples of that in our pockets.
I'll twist this a little bit because I have mentioned this a couple of times on the Solid Signal blog. If you write a piece of software today or an app or whatever, you are actually protected in some way, shape, or form for about 95 years, which means that anything that people are doing in the vintage computer scene, chances are there's some element of it being technically illegal. Does that bother you? Do you feel like there's a lot of change that needs to happen?
I mean, I think ultimately our lawmakers have to update some of the regulations and rules around copyright. As we know, you know, this year when Mickey Mouse went free and people were going crazy with various memes around that, I think that updating our laws around technology and software and copyright makes sense, especially in the light of technology is improving so quickly that the older software wouldn't even run on hardware from today, and it's not going to necessarily harm or hurt any intellectual property owners. It's not like people are making money still to this day off of software that's 40 years old. And I think that it should be freed up sooner, especially in light of the fact that software generations occur much more rapidly than intellectual property such as art or television or media that we consume.
And I know you're familiar with the Internet Archive. I talk about that a lot because I think it's worth saving. But there's a real case where there's a ton of stuff on there that probably the Internet Archive doesn't have the right to store or serve. But yet we all kind of look the other way because it just, you know, we want to see what Microsoft's website looked like in 1997.
I know, but it's also an important cultural artifact. I think it's important that I contribute to the Internet Archive. I donate to that. A very important organization, in my opinion, because it does serve as an archive of all things digital from the internet that otherwise would be lost to time and we would have no clear, good records of it. And because it's digital data that can be saved in this way, why not take advantage of that? And I think that if any copyright holders, for example, have problems with stuff, as long as it's not actually impinging on their ability to make money in the current market, I think that they should just back off.
I like you, I support the Internet Archive. I do wish that they would take down some of the earlier iterations of the Solid Signal blog. I get a little embarrassed.
That's fair. That's fair. I see websites I made back in 1994 for my medical school. And I'm like, man, that was crude. And why did I use a blinky tag? And, you know, I get it. I get it.
Let's pivot from the past into the future. What are you most excited about in the next year, 2 years, as far as technology is concerned, if anything?
Personally, I think it's the integration of AI and machine learning and hardware. For me, simple example is, you know, getting home automation is tricky because there's so many different flavors of it, whether you go with the Google ecosystem or the Amazon ecosystem or even the Apple. And there's plenty of knockoff brands, but trying to get, you know, your darn light switch to automatically turn on when you walk into the room, sometimes it's far more complicated than it needs to be. And maybe, you know, integrating AI, as it were, software into the mix of it all could really help these technologies work better in our lives to make them actually easier and simpler.
Thinking about it as a medical professional, are you worried that AI is going to either cost jobs or create problems that we don't foresee?
I think you're right in both regards. I think it will cost jobs for sure. But the idea is this, if we can get rid of more and more jobs and then come up with a way that humans can really just thrive in the way they want to as individuals, maybe that's a more perfect society.
That is an amazing thing to think about. and probably a perfect time to end our podcast. I want to thank you, Dr. Shaw, for all of your insights and for being the very first ever podcast guest on the Solid Signal podcast. Folks, if you want to be a guest on the Solid Signal podcast, all you have to do is leave a comment anywhere that you get this podcast. I will find it, or use the contact the editor link down at the Solid Signal blog, blog.solidsignal.com. And as always, remember that this podcast is sponsored by Solid Signal. Shop at Solid Signal for everything that you need to live your best digital life. And if you want to understand what real customer service is like, call us at 888-233-7563. That's it for the Solid Signal podcast, and I'll see you next week.